What's going on? This is the Noah Gillian Show, and I, of course, am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 24th of January, 2024, and on today's episode, we're going to do a quick news episode, just rounding up some NFL news as the offseason's gone underway, and then also some NBA breaking news that took place over the last couple days. Before we get into the show, please hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, give the show a follow. It really helps the show grow. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, at The Noah Gillian Show. You can find me on Twitter, at Noah Gillian, and on Instagram, at NoahGill1. So without further ado, let's just jump right into it. So this is going to be a little quicker pod today, just jumping on to talk a little news roundup and, you know, some stuff that's been breaking over the last couple days. Appreciate the feedback from the last episode. Obviously hyped to have Sean on and get some more conversations going in the future. But let's just jump in. We'll talk NFL to start. There was some big news of in Philadelphia. Brian Johnson and Sean Desai both out as the offensive and defensive coordinators, respectively, for the Eagles. This is something that we kind of talked about a little bit on the show, on episode 60, with Sean on it. You know, I expected Desai to be gone. Obviously, he got demoted during the middle of the year, so that wasn't a big surprise. I thought Brian Johnson may come back, just to kind of keep the continuity of the offense going, but it appears that that decision was, you know, made out of the ineptitude of the offense over the last couple weeks of the year, over the last kind of third of the year. And, you know, I can't blame him. I feel bad for Brian Johnson. I feel like he was scapegoated a little bit in terms of what happened. I think Sirianni's influence on the offense was more than people will realize. Not saying neither one of them was at fault or either one of them is absolved of blame. But I do think Brian Johnson kind of was the scapegoat in this situation. And listen, he may go on to another team, be an offensive coordinator and do great and use this experience to, you know, further his career. I just don't think Philadelphia is going to be a place where that was going to be able to take place, you know, because God forbid they come out and they start the season similar to how they ended last season. You know, at that point, I would have much rather had just had a new guy in, new system, and just gone in as opposed to wasting another year of trying the same thing again. So we'll see what happens. One name that was surfacing for the offensive coordinator, Cliff Kingsbury, that was a name that came out, former Arizona head coach. He spent time recently with Southern California in NCAA football as their offensive coordinator. I don't know exactly how I feel about that because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury seems to have underachieved with good, with good options at the quarterback. You know, he had Kyler Murray, he had Patrick Mahomes when he was at Texas Tech, he had Caleb Williams, and it seems like the team's never really won a lot of games. They did put up points, and I guess that's what he's there for. He's more of a intermediate to type of offensive mind, not a lot of RPOs. So we'll see kind of how that would act up. But he was not the only one to get interviews. Also, Texans quarterback coach Jerod Johnson interviewed for the offense coordinator job today. Obviously, a big part of C.J. Stroud's integration into the NFL and his ascent to be one of the next great young quarterbacks in this league. So, you know, it seems like they're covering their bases. They're kind of talking to a number of different kinds of players. And I need a creative mind. I'd like to see, I saw one person mention even maybe the Rams offensive coordinator. I'd love to pull up his name, why I have it. But he was a guy where, you know, he's been there for 5 years and he's been under Sean McVay for a few years now. And I think Mike LaFleur, I think, could do pretty well. You know, he was on the Rams coaching staff as the team's offense coordinator this year. You know, I think, you know, he could potentially get good, but I just want them to see maybe some more. I just like to see them do a nice wide search here and get someone that they really think can, you know, maybe bring in different opinions than Nick Sirianni and maybe challenge him a little bit. So we'll see where that goes. Sirianni and Howie Roseman have a press conference today. I'm not sure they're really going to break much news in that press conference. They're going to say a lot of things that sound good in a press conference, but, you know, overall, we'll see what they say. Also, there was a piece of news that came out that Ron Rivera, former Washington head coach, also interviewed for the defensive coordinator position. That I don't mind. I mean, Washington's defense, although it had players the last couple of years, seemed to really underachieve at times. So, you know, we'll kind of see how that goes. You know, I don't know. I just like to see them, you know, kind of get a lot of names and not just settle on the first guy that they land on. One interesting little note I was thinking about, the Ron Rivera name kind of made me think of it, is it'll be interesting to see if they tend to lean towards guys with head coaching experience, because if they get guys that were coordinators or quarterbacks coaches and they bring them in, you know, that's one thing. But if they bring in guys that have head coaching experience, you know, I don't think that bodes necessarily phenomenally for Nick Sirianni. You know, we've been a proponent that we should keep Nick Sirianni. He's done enough to earn another, at least another year. But, you know, potentially having a head coach at your coordinator position, you know, might make the transition a little bit easier if they were to let go of Sirianni midseason. I don't think that's what they'll do. Jeffrey Lurie has never been that type of guy. Even as seasons have crashed and burned, he usually gives his coaches to the end of the year. He usually moves off coaches a year early rather than a year late, but it's very rarely during the middle of the season. So we'll see kind of how that plays out. But those were some names that were interviewed for the coordinator positions, but both Brian Johnson and Sean Desai are out. So for the second consecutive year, the Eagles will be looking for two new coordinators on each side of the football. Another big name, obviously one of the biggest names in the NFL, is Bill Belichick. It was almost assumed that he would be the next coach of the Atlanta Falcons, but over the last couple days, over the last week, that's really been losing a lot of steam. He did two interviews with the Falcons, and it seemed as if you know, the writing was on the wall. You know, Belichick in New England had huge personnel control, which it seems as if the reports are accurate, you know, that may have been a turnoff to some of Atlanta Falcons front office, you know, who control the roster. You know, Arthur Blank, the owner, I think is really adamant about signing him based on the reports that I was reading this morning. But a lot of the front office personnel didn't want him. And I don't know if that comes down to Belichick wanting more personnel control, or, you know, maybe he's, you know, a defensive head coach, an older head coach. Maybe they want someone younger. And, you know, I don't know. But what I do think is, you know, any team would be better with Bill Belichick. They have a defense that has a lot of good players on it, and an offense that, frankly, is a quarterback away from being a very competent offense with the weapons that they have and the draft capital they've spent. So it'll be really interesting. I find it interesting that Atlanta, for the second offseason in a row, is kind of publicly having stories come out that they're denouncing or backing away from elite talent. Last offseason, it was Lamar Jackson. And this offseason, it's Bill Belichick as their head coach. You know, I don't know if that's the best kind of thing to do. You know, great people are great for a reason. And just the fact that, you know, you're so adamant about not, you know, exercising some intrigue with it. Obviously, the two interviews, you know, could be classified as intrigue. But, you know, I just think that the reports coming out are telling. You know, I think they're really telling about the front office in Atlanta. So we'll see what he does. Is he done in coaching? I don't know. I really don't know. I think he's got to be toward the end of his career. I think he's probably got maybe 4 or 5 years max left. I can't see him coaching long after his 76th birthday. I mean, he's 72 now, so I can't see him coaching much more past 75. So I could see him maybe signing one more head coaching job as a 3, 4, 5 year deal. But if he sits out this year, you know, I don't really see why. What would be the drawback, you know, for him to go into another head coaching job at 73? Turning 74 the next season and, like, you know, and really going after that. I think he, you know, is probably going to get into TV and see how that goes and make a boatload of money doing that. But, you know, if that itch is still there, then, you know, go for it. You know, I think he's been one of the most successful head coaches in the league. It's not a think, it is. It's a fact. So, you know, we'll see kind of what happens there. Do I think he's done? Honestly, if this Atlanta, if this offseason comes and goes and he's without a job, I think he's done. I think he ends up retiring. You know, if he does get a job this year, like I said, I think the shelf life on that maybe lasts 3, 4, 5 years, right? Okay. Speaking of head coaches, there's been a few already named. These are kind of came over the last couple of days. Antonio Pierce, after going 5-4 as the interim head coach for the Las Vegas Raiders, and Raiders and has had plenty of support from his players, has officially been named the head coach. I think this is great. I think it's a team that is not near the playoffs, honestly. I think it's a team that needs a lot of help in a lot of different positions. And a guy like Antonio Pierce, who the players will rally around, I think will get the most out of his players. And if your stars are backing the guy, that is what you need to invest in. If they were to bring in a new head coach, you know, Max Crosby and Davante Adams, probably their two best players on the team, are vocal about Antonio Pierce, and you go and sign someone else after hearing how vocal they were for, you know, that head coach, you know, I just don't think that's, you know, necessarily the best move as a franchise. So I'm excited, and I think he's a good defensive mind. Obviously the league's shifting a little bit more towards offense, but, you know, maybe they bring in a good OC or whatever the case may be, and they can really spark that offense. But Antonio Pierce should get the best out of his players, should energize them on a week-to-week basis, and have them potentially play above their heads. So we'll see what happens there. This one came out most recently. Brian Callahan, the former offensive coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals, will now be the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. The Cincinnati offense for the last couple years, specifically since they've drafted Joe Burrow, has been one of the most prolific in the league. He's had a lot of weapons at his disposal in Cincinnati, mainly Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Joe Mixon in the backfield. He's had, you know, Tyler Boyd. He's had a lot of good play, and then not to mention Joe Burrow. I mean, my goodness. And, you know, so I think that he, you know, got the best out of his guys. Was the players making the, you know, coach look good? You know, maybe, I don't know, but I think that he's earned this. You know, it's going to be a season of turnover in Tennessee. Derrick Henry is a free agent. He's probably not going to be back. DeAndre Hopkins contract is came and went. It seems as if Ryan Tannehill is going to be moved off after this year. So they're going to go into next year with, you know, Will Levis probably as their starting quarterback, Tajay Spears starting running back, you know, Treylon Burks. You know, they're going to have to maybe draft another receiver, sign another receiver, and then, you know, see what their defense can do. But I think it's, you know, telling that they wanted to go after a young up-and-coming mind like Brian Callahan, an offensive mind. So we'll see kind of what happens there, but that was the most recent news. And then Jerod Mayo was the first domino to fall in this coaching cycle. The last couple of years, they really haven't been shy at the fact that they've been kind of grooming Jerod Mayo for this position. And lo and behold, a day after Belichick and the Patriots decided to part ways, Jerod Mayo was named the new head coach. You know, I think he'll do well. I think he will do well. New England's going to be their number three. They pick number three in the draft. It's going to be really, really, really interesting to see where they go. I think if Drake May is available there at number three for them, I think they have to pounce. If not, I think you take Marvin Harrison. I just think that that's what you have to do. If they're really not sold on Mac Jones or Bailey Zappe anymore, maybe you trade back a pick or two and then take Jaden Daniels from LSU, pick up another pick. That was a famous Bill Belichick strategy, always to trade back in the draft and accumulate more and more assets. I could, you know, if they don't, you know, and Marvin Harrison would solve a huge issue on that team with perimeter playmakers. They've consistently missed on those for a long, long time. So the fact, if they were be able to get that, you know, it would fill a huge hole. It would help whatever quarterback you have. Or, since you have so many holes, the defense should be better. Christian Gonzalez from Oregon, second-year player in this season coming up, was one of the front runners for Defensive Rookie of the Year. He ended the year injured. Matthew Judon ended the year injured. You know, they're two best players defensively, so their defense should be better coming into next year, which is obviously Jerod Mayo's area of expertise. I expect the defense to be very, very good next year. Is it going to be as good as it was with Bill Belichick? You know, that remains to be seen, but I do think that the defense will be humming. Running back-wise, Ramondre Stevenson, very good running back. I think, you know, coming into next year healthy will be big for him, an offseason to recover. You know, maybe they attack the offensive line, a couple good offensive tackles in this draft. You know, I think that could be a serious thing. Maybe trade back three or four picks and take an offensive lineman. I think it's all on the table. Quarterback, wide receiver, tackle, all three needs, I believe, for New England. And I think, you know, they got lucky because it's a deep draft for all of those positions. So we'll see. I do think Jerod Mayo will be successful. Everything you've read about him, everything I've been led to believe is he's a very, very high character individual. And he'll get the best out of his players. So I anticipate New England to do well in the future. They're going to be a well-coached team. They're not going to be an easy pushover as they have been, you know, the last year or so. So I think they will be better. I do think they need to solve the quarterback position. I really do. I don't think they're just going to be able to plug and play Mac Jones or Bailey Zappi and be super competitive. But, you know, with a good defense and a good running game, you know, history has shown that has been a formula, at least from some mild success in the NFL. All right, guys, we're going to finish up this episode talking about a little bit of NBA. There's been some big Sixers news over the last couple of days, and then some big news from Milwaukee, so we'll touch on that real quick. The number one thing is on the docket is Joel Embiid. I mean, Joel Embiid dropped 70 points on Monday. I just, like, every time I look at that figure, it's just, it's so uncomfortable to look at, honestly. Like, so many times you see a player drop 33, 34, and you're like, damn, he had a great game. And then you see these performances every now and then, you're like, oh man, he had 50. Like, that is an all-time game. And then Joel Embiid has 53 through 3.5 quarters and gets all the way up to 70 points, breaking the Sixers franchise record. He's the 9th player all-time to achieve that feat. He's also the player out of those 9 to play the fewest minutes of any player to score 70 points in a game. You know, a lot of the talk about Joel Embiid rightfully goes to his playoff record and his injury history. But what I think goes by the wayside a lot is the absolute talent that Joel Embiid is. There is a handful, and when I say a handful, maybe 3, 4, or 5 players in NBA history that have ever been like Joel Embiid. And honestly, when you watch him play, he's got shades of Kobe Bryant. He's got shades of Shaquille O'Neal. He's got shades of Hakeem Olajuwon. He's got shades of Nikola Jokic. Like, he's got shades of all these different players morphed into one. And he is such a unique talent that the hate with him often goes so far. And he said it even in an interview the other day. He said, you know, if people want clicks and people want views, they put Joel Embiid in the headline and people will react to it because he's just that polarizing of a figure. I think it's true. I think it's very self-aware of Joel, but at the same time, you can see the maturity level of him just to say, listen, I'm not getting involved in this stuff anymore. You know who I am. I know what I need to do, and I'm going to be focused on doing that. And I think that is just so humble. That's so, you know, just such great humility from Joel Embiid, such great maturity from Joel Embiid. And I just think that Monday was the latest example of that. A few days after dropping 40 and 10 assists on Nikola Jokic on a nationally televised game, he goes out against the next superstar of the NBA, Victor Wembanyama, and absolutely takes his lunch money and drops 70 points. You know, it remains to be seen what they will be doing at the deadline. One name that's kind of been surfacing is Malcolm Brogdon. As a potential trade target, he plays for Portland now. He was on Boston last year in the Drew Holiday deal that sent Drew Holiday got sent to Boston, obviously, and Malcolm Brogdon and picks went to Portland. That was all kind of tied directly to the Damian Lillard deal. Obviously, Drew Holiday went from Milwaukee to Portland and obviously wasn't going to stay there. Went from Portland to Boston. So Malcolm Brogdon's kind of up there in Portland, not really doing much, and, you know, on a 2-year, $45 million deal, including this year. And he's been a name that some people have brought up, you know, package maybe including Robert Covington, KJ Martin, maybe 1 or 2 first-round picks would bring Malcolm Brogdon in. And I think he would be a good addition, a good bench piece, a guy that can play both guard positions, that can shoot, that can handle the ball, that's strong, can rebound, has played in a lot of big games. And I think he would be a really, really good addition. Do I want to empty the war chest, so to speak, of assets to get him? I don't think so. But at the same time, Joel Embiid is having arguably his career season a year after winning MVP, and Tyrese Maxey has ascended to an all-star level number two. So if you can bring in a guy like Malcolm Brogdon to be probably like your fourth option to kind of run the second unit when Maxey's not on the floor, you know, I think that's as good as any on this market right now. I don't really want to trade a bunch of stuff for Zach LaVine or DeMar DeRozan or, you know, Kyle Kuzma or one of these guys. You know, I'd rather just see what Malcolm Brogdon has to offer and go after there at a little cheaper alternative. So we'll see what happens there. I think the Sixers are definitely in title contention. They'll obviously be chasing Boston, who is pretty much leading the pack right now. And, you know, is pretty much going to, you know, be the head of the Eastern Conference. And then, you know, we'll see what happens with Milwaukee. But, you know, I just wanted to give a shout out to Joel Embiid because 70 points is just something you do not see often. Obviously, Damian Lillard did that last season, and Devin Booker did it a few seasons ago, maybe four, five, 6 years ago. But before that, it hadn't been done, I want to say, since Kobe's 81. Maybe David Robinson before that. But I think those were the last 70-point games. So the fact that Joel Embiid did it in the fashion that he did it, just absolutely great. Shot 58% from the field. I mean, just a super efficient game from him as well. Only one three-pointer, too, by the way. Out of those 70 points, only one three-pointer, and it wasn't an egregious amount of free throws either. I think he made 21 out of 24, so just an overall great game from Joel. I mentioned Milwaukee. They ended up firing their head coach, Adrian Griffin, yesterday, I believe, or a day or two ago, and Doc Rivers was a name that surfaced. There was a lot of, you know, conflicting reports over where are they going to sign him? Did they not sign him? And then news came out from Woj today that they did, in fact, sign Doc Rivers to a contract. Honestly, as a Sixers fan watching the team last year, it's probably a good thing. You know, it's going to be really, really interesting to see what Doc actually does with that team. You know, some main reasons why Griffin was, even though they're 30 and 13, I believe, or something like that, they're, you know, Griffin's inability to convey his vision and lead the team was, you know, a major factor for his decision, or excuse me, for his departure. And, you know, a major factor was even cited in some stories was being their extreme fall off on the defensive end of the floor, where, you know, they've been a phenomenal defense over the last couple of years, which has turned into a bottom third unit. And, like, I just, when I read that, you know, like, part of me thinks, like, what did you think was going to happen? Right? Like, part of me is like, you had Drew Holiday, one of the best, one of the best perimeter ball handler, or excuse me, defenders in the league, lead ball defenders in the league, one of the best dogs on defense in the entire association. And you replace him with Damian Lillard, one of the all-time generational scorers, but a major knock on Damian Lillard his entire career has been his lack of size and lack of defensive prowess. It just has, and that's not a knock at all to Damian Lillard. It just is what it is at this point. He's 33. You know, things aren't 34. Things aren't changing for Damian Lillard at this point of his career. So, you know, their whole defense was built around Drew Holiday being able to hound on the perimeter and then allowing Brook Lopez to play in his drop coverage, which he is so, so good at. And one thing Adrian Griffin was so known for, especially being an assistant under Nick Nurse in Toronto, was a very aggressive attacking the ball defense, which included his center hedging out and attacking and maybe sometimes even doubling the ball. And, you know, it came out via Shams and via The Athletic that, you know, Giannis, and they even had a meeting and said, listen, can we not do that? Can we let Brook Lopez do what he wants to do and be a drop defender in that coverage? And, you know, and then it ended up changing. It got a little better and then it all, you know, fell apart again. So, you know, I don't really know what Doc Rivers is going to do because I just don't think the personnel is the same to be an elite defensive team. It just isn't. You know, they're going to be good in the paint, you know, whatever the case may be. They're going to give up three-pointers. Chris Middleton hasn't been healthy all year. He's been in and out of the lineup. So a once very, very good perimeter defender is hampered. And then you add, you know, Damian Lillard, obviously. You lose Grayson Allen, a good perimeter defender, you know, a physical defensive player. And you know, I just don't understand how it was just like they thought the defense was going to be fine. Like, I know Giannis is a former defensive player of the year. I know Brooke Lopez is a very good rim protector. Chris Middleton in his day is a good, on his best day, is a very good defensive player. But like, you knew Damian Lillard, that was not his strong suit. So the fact that he's leading your defense as the head of the spear at the top of the key, like, I just don't understand, like, that came as such a surprise. I think Adrian Griffin kind of got, you know, for lack of a better word, shafted in that instance, because he was just like, he was in a lose-lose situation. The offense has been humming. They're top three, top five in a lot of categories. Obviously, they added Damian Lillard. You know what I mean? One of the best offensive players of all time. One of the only nine players to score 70 points in a single ball game. But at the same time, I just think Adrian Griffin got scapegoated a little bit in terms of not being able to really connect with the team. I think Giannis probably voiced his opinion. You know, I do really like Giannis, but sometimes he rubs me the wrong way with certain things that he does, in terms of, you know, certain sound bites he gives maybe and all that stuff. You know, it sounds great sometimes, but other times it's just, eh. And I think Adrian Griffin kind of paid the price here. I don't think Doc Rivers is really going to do anything. What I do think he's going to do is just allow Giannis to use his voice more, Damian Lillard to use his voice more, and allow them to not coach, but to pretty much be the vocal leaders in the room. And Doc Rivers is just going to do what he does. He's just going to say, hey, guys, it's on you. What's going on? What do you want to do? I'll put some stuff in, kind of, and you will do what you do. And so it'll be interesting to see what changes is made of late, because Doc has been allegedly advising Adrian Griffin over the last couple weeks as Griffin was a first year head coach. You know, the Bucks reached out to Doc Rivers to, you know, offer some guidance to Griffin, and you know, that was kind of the writing on the wall for Griffin there. But overall, I think that is going to wrap up the episode today. I just wanted to hop on. There was a few news stories that came out specifically regarding the Eagles. You know, also some NBA news that was really, really big, that related to the Sixers, obviously, and some Eastern Conference contenders. So, you know, I just wanted to hop on and give a quick news take. Also got the question submitted about Bill Belichick and Jerod Mayo. So I wanted to get on here and talk about there. So that's going to wrap it up for the show today. If you enjoyed, definitely hit that follow button on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It's really the only way to support the show, and it really helps it grow. So I really appreciate it if you guys would do that. And then other than that, we'll wrap it up there. We'll look forward to seeing you back here again next time.